Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Kuf Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 18 lines from the top of Daf Kuf Aleph. You can estimate approximately one-third of the way from the top. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we have a topic heading that you can see in the margin called the Nosei. And you'll notice an Aleph and Beis that are encircled. These correspond to the lettering that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text itself, between the Gemara and the Tosfos. You notice an Aleph with a vertical dashed line. And a few lines after that, a base, again, with a vertical dashed line. Our note says, Shtei Gishois, two approaches. Lahazbir HaMishnah B'Demai. There is a Mishnah from Maseches Demai in Seder Zroim. And there it says, Rebuta Oimer HaMakabel Sodeh Avoisov, one who receives as a worker, as a sharecropper, to work on Soda Avoisov. That's an expression that will have to be clarified in the Gemara. Nekudos she'idonu, points that will be featured in the Gemara. Number one, Yesh kinyan lenochri lehafkia kedushas oretz. A non-Jew who owns land in the land of Israel. The land of Israel has holiness attached to it. And as a result of that Kedushas Haaretz, there are mitzvos, there are precepts, commandments that apply to the land of Israel that are not binding outside the land of Israel, certainly on a Torah level. And the result of Kedushas Haaretz is the obligation to tithe from the produce that grows therein. There are other halachas concerning Shemitah, etc. We don't have to elaborate on the extent of that list of mitzvahs. But I think you get the idea that as a result of a kedusha, of a sanctity that's associated with the land, there are additional mitzvahs that apply. What happens when a nochri, when a heathen, buys property in the land? Does that obligation to tithe from that produce remain? Or do we say that the acquisition on the part of the heathen results in the undoing, the voiding of that sanctity? So that's the issue of whether we say Yesh Kinyan Lenochri Lahafkia Kedusha. Another point, number two, Mekabel. Mekabel literally is one who receives. It's a reference to a sharecropper. The Talmudic approach to Oris, sharecropper, is that he will till, cultivate, produce produce from someone's land owned by someone else, and they will share in a percentage of the profits, where the Oris will receive maybe a third or a half of the produce in exchange for the work and efforts that he invests in the land. There's another arrangement called a chocher. A chocher is someone who likewise works the land, but the agreement between the chocher and the owner is that the chocher will provide the owner with a fixed amount, an objective quantity, as opposed to a percentage. And that obligation is binding upon the chocher, regardless of whether or not the land produces, whether or not he works the land. he made an agreement to provide a certain objective amount of produce to the owner in exchange for his working the field. Do we compare laws concerning an oris to laws concerning a chocher? Specifically, the need to tithe from the produce before giving his portion, giving the owner his portion. That will hopefully become clear when we get into the Gemara itself. Now, the Gemara. As we said, 18 lines from the top, following the slash mark. Tanan Hossam. It's taught in a Mishnah there in Maseches Demai, Rav Yehuda Olmer. Hamekabel Soda Avosov Min Hanochri. One who receives a Soda Avosov. We mentioned in our introductory remarks that that's a phrase that the Gemara will have to clarify. So one who received that from a heathen, Me'aser V'nosein Lo. What does Me'aser mean? He has to tithe all of the produce. Rashi, if we look at Rashi together, you'll see about a third of the way from the top. Rashi says, Me'aser Tchila Kol Hatvua. He must tithe all of the produce. V'achar Kach Nosein Lo L'Nochri Chelko. And then give the we'll say the owner, the heathen owner, his portion. V'nimsa me'aser mishalo al shel nochri. The result of that is that this mekabel sadeh, this worker figure, he is separating from that which he receives from his own portion to cover that which he is giving to the nochri. If we're going to talk in terms of a percentage of the field, the sharecropper, let's say he gets 33%, he gets a third of the produce, and he will give two-thirds of the produce to the owner. The owner will be getting two-thirds of the total produce before tithing. However, the mekabel sadeh, he will have to tithe the tithes that would be demanded by 100% of the produce, of the harvest. So he's going to tithe, we'll say, off the top, so to speak, the respective tithes right at the outset, and then give the owner, the Nochri owner, the percentage that he was expected to receive before the tithes. So the result is that the worker, the oris, is separating the tithes from his own portion to cover the entire field. Now the Gemara, in analyzing this Tanaic quote, we lay down assumptions. Number one, Savrua, my Sodavosav, Eretz Yisrael. The term Sodavosav is assumed to mean the land of Israel. Ve'amai korulei Sodavosav, why is it referred to as the field of his fathers? The word Avosav literally means his fathers. How does the land of Israel fit into the term Avosav? The answer to that is, land of Israel is Sada Avram Yisuv Yankov. It's the land that was promised to our forefathers, the patriarchs. Hence, the term Avosov is appropriate in describing the land of Israel, the entire land of Israel. V'kosavar, another assumption. Ein kinyin l'nochri b'eretz Yisrael l'hafkia miyad meiser. The ownership of a heathen of land in Israel does not have the effect of freeing it from the need for tithing. And as third assumption, umekabel, a mekabel is an oris, he is an individual that gives a percentage of the harvest to the owner. Kechocher domi is like a chocher in the following sense. Ma chocher, a chocher worker, who we described earlier as one who gives an objective amount to the owner as whatever they agreed upon. Just like a chocher, bein ovad Uvein lo avad boy asuri umutin le. He, whether he worked the land or not, he must first tithe before giving the owner what is due to the owner. We said there's a fixed amount that the owner gets from the chocher. The chocher, when delivering that produce to the owner, he has to tithe from that which he gives to the owner beforehand. There's a concept that one cannot pay off his debts with tithes. Therefore, the expectation is that before giving the owner what is due to him, he must tithe it and then give it to him, so that he doesn't end up paying his debt with his debt to the owner with produce that part of which the owner is going to have to take off and tithe. Therefore, the worker must see to it that the tithing takes place beforehand, so that what he gives the owner is, we'll say, net chulin, net useful, permissible produce. So just like that is the rule that applies to a chocher, namely that he must tithe before giving that which he owes to the owner, af mekabel nami, so to the sharecropper, ki porea chovoso domi, he too would be viewed as someone who's paying off a debt. Therefore, me'aser, the no singo, he must remove or separate all of the tithes and then give the owner the agreed upon percentage, or the accepted percentage. With that in mind, then, we understand the source above where Rabbi Yehuda said, in Oris, who receives a parcel of land, who works a parcel of land that's owned by a heathen in the land of Israel, must first tithe from all of the tefuah, from all of the produce, being that we hold, according to this approach, ein kinyan lenochri beretz Yisrael afkia miyad maaser, the land held by the nochri still is bound to have tithes removed from it. Therefore, if a Jew is serving as a sharecropper, he has to see to it that the tithing takes place before he gives it to the owner as per the laws concerning a chocher. Now, we turn back to the Gemara. Omar le Rav Kahana le Rav Poppy, the Amri law, another version of names is that Rav Kahana addressed the Amri law le Rav Zvid. Eloha desanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Makabel Soda Voisov Mimatzik Nochri Maaser Venosin Lo. Here you have another version of Rabbi Yehuda. It sounds very similar, but there's one word that's added. Mimatzik, it says. A matzik is an oppressor, a heathen oppressor. If you receive a land, piece, parcel of land that to work for a heathen that is an oppressive character, then you have to tithe and tithe from all of the produce and give the nochri, the heathen owner, his portion. Well, if the Aleph approach that we said before was correct, then my Irya Amatzik, why does this source speak of a matzik, afilu ein matzik nami? The same should apply to a pleasant heathen as well, even a non-oppressive heathen. So this leads us to the second approach, Ella. Now, you'll notice there are little numbers that appear in parentheses. These numbers correspond to the numbers we had above that appeared in order, the three assumptions that we laid down. So, Ella, li oilom yesh kinyan lo chiber tisrael lafkia miad meiser. Above, that appeared in number two in the opposite form. It said, ein kinyan lenochri. Here, yesh kinyan lenochri beretz Yisrael lafkia miad meiser, which would mean in general. a parcel of land owned by a heathen in the land of Israel is no longer bound to have tithes removed from it. Another assumption, umekabel lav kechocher gedomi, one who is serving as a sharecropper, as an oris, is not treated legally the same way a chocher is. Above, we mentioned that in comparing them, we said just like a chocher must see to it that the tithing takes place before he gives the objective amount to the owner, so too by the oris, here we're going to say to the contrary, not so. That a sharecropper who gives a percentage to the owner is not bound the same way a chocher is with regard to the need for tithing. He doesn't need, the mekabel, the oris, doesn't need to tithe beforehand. In other words, he'll give the owner the percentage of the total harvest, and the owner, if he were Jewish, for example, would have to take care of the tithing himself. So that a mekabel is not like a chocher, umai soda avoisov. And regarding the definition of that term, soda avoisov mamish, it's a reference to a piece of land that was literally owned by his father. Not patriarchs going back in history to the forefathers, but rather his own father owned the land, and the nochri spoken about in the source is a nochri that stole the land, dispossessed this individual's father. So we have a son working on a parcel of land that he knew was once his own father's. But in the meantime, the nochri dispossessed the family from their land. Ulididei, who de konsua rabbonon, the didei is a reference to the ben. The son is the one upon whom the rabbis imposed this, literally a knas is a fine, this we'll call stringency, obligating him to tithe before giving the harvest, the percentage of the harvest to the heathen owner. The rabbis imposed this need to tithe ahead of time on the son of the Jewish owner, the original owner. The id de chaviva ole tofi v'ozil mekabel law. Since he has a personal affinity toward the land, it's land that was once his own father's, he will not be deterred from working the land by the fact that we're going to expect of him, the son, to tithe ahead of time. And as we explained, the result is that he's removing the tithes for the whole field from his own portion of the harvest. But since chaviva means a desired, loved affinity, since the son has this affinity toward the land, he will literally add the tithing from his own portion to cover that which he's going to be giving to the nochri. Aval inish de almalo, but some man from the general public, we wouldn't say thusly. In other words, if we were to expect a man from the general public to tithe to tithe from his own portion the amount of tithes that are generated by the entire field, he wouldn't bother working the field. Uladidei mai taima konsua rabbonan. And what is the reason the rabbis imposed this stringency on the son? Amar Rav Yochanan. This volcano marking you can compare to the marking you saw above. We saw this in our previous year. We want to create a connection between these two portions of Gemara. Amar Rav Yochanan, kidei shetehei bora biyado. The Rashi explains Rashi that we'll look at together, a third of the way up from the bottom of the Rashi commentary. We want to motivate the son to repossess, to purchase back the land from the heathen that took it from his father. Since this expectation of tithing is burdensome upon him, he'll trouble himself and add money, pay. In other words, he doesn't, technically it's stolen property, he shouldn't have to pay anything for it, but he will trouble himself and come up with the funds via Salik Anochri Meno and get the heathen removed from it. Or by paying for it, he will in effect remove the heathen from it. And Rashi explains the word bora that the Gemara used, brura umuchzek, is clearly clear and possessed by the rightful family. So the Rabbi Yochanan explains the whole reason for our focused stringency upon the son is to create this strained relationship and obligation toward the field, so that he'll be motivated to buy it away from the heathen. Omar Rebbe Yirmiya, Kagoyin Da Tzricha Rabba. In order to offer that as an explanation, you need a great man. In other words, as we saw earlier in our previous year, this is not an idea that one would have necessarily come up with on their own. And Rashi is quick to point out a structural observation, and one of the benefits of having these markings is that this last piece of Gemara was cited here in order to show or to give us another example of Rabbi Yirmiya and his observation. That was what Rabbi Yirmiya pointed out in our previous sukkah regarding the topic that was germane to our perek, and he reacted in the same way to Rabbi Yochanan's analysis there, and with this point. And Rashi says it. You can see we have a Rashi with a little star in it. Om Rabbi Yirmiya umishum hachi nokat le hocha didamio lahafta leel. This is cited here because it's similar to that which we saw above in terms of Rabbi Yochanan making a comment and Rabbi Yirmiya reacting that only a great man would be relied upon for this, for these respective observations. On the side of the Gemara, as we continue, we have a nosei/mivneh, structural note. A topic heading with a structural note combined into one note. The crown shape that you see highlights the word itmar. So if you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice immediately itmar and the fourth wide line also. We always advocate people scanning ahead when you see markings immediately to see where the next ones appear. Shnei mikrim, two cases, shel hayered lenichse chavero shelo brishus. The double underline you'll see in the Gemara highlights this phenomenon of a person descending into someone else's property uninvited, without permission, vishpicham, and improves them. In the first case, you'll see an example of planting property, planting land, and in the second example, you'll see a ruin that is reconstructed by an uninvited party. And that's the hishbicham, and the uninvited party improves the properties. Hayim yachal ligvois tashlum, can he demand pay? The triangle that you see here highlights either sode or later churba shel chavero. Churba is a ruin. Now the Gemara. Itmar hayored l'soich stei chavero v'not ah shelo b'rishus, someone who descended upon someone's field without being requested to do so, and he planted the property with trees, saplings. Omar Rav. So Rav rules. How do we deal with this? Shomin lo, we make an assessment, and we say v'yodo al hatachtona. He has the his literally his hand is underneath, meaning he has the lesser of two claims. Now, practically speaking, what do we mean lesser of two claims? So Rashi explains that if the improved value or the increased value of the field, which is called shevach, is greater than his expenses, the uninvited party can demand only expenses. He can't demand the entire value of the field improvement. If the field, if the expenses exceeded the increased value, then Yodo Ala Tachtona tells us he has the gets the lesser end of the deal. He can then demand the increased value of the field alone, and not all of his expenses. So, in a case like that, he won't be able to recover even that which he invested in this field. He'll get only up till the value of the improvement, being that in that case the expenses exceeded the amount he invested in it. Ushmuel Omar, Oimdin, we evaluate Kama Odom Roitze Litain Besodezu Lenota. How much would a person pay to have the field planted? Omar Rav Popa, Velo Pligi. Rav and Shmuel are not arguing. Kan Besodo Asuya Lita. Shmuel's approach is with reference to a field that is deemed or expected to be planted. Imagine a field that sits in a region where all the surrounding fields are planted with fruit trees. So this one field located in the midst of a region of fields planted with trees, this is expected likewise to be planted. So in a case like that, though the party was uninvited, we nevertheless will pay him the amount you would pay to have someone hired to plant the field. Kan, Rav's approach, where we say the party gets the lesser end of the deal, Besoda Shena Suyalita, it's a field that's not expected or it was not anticipated that it would be planted. You'll notice now we have a long marking. V'ho derav lav v'ferush itmar elo mechlolo itmar. Rav's ruling was not stated in an explicit fashion. This idea that shomin lo v'yodo ala tachtona was derived, that's mechlolo itmar, derived from an incident. Let's continue in the Gemara. Dehahu de'osa lekamei derav. It was a case where a parcel of land was planted without the owner inviting the party to do so. Omar lezil shum la, shum le. So Rav ruled, make an evaluation. The owner says, "Why? Well, I didn't want it to be planted. I don't want it planted with trees. This was a grain field. So why should based on an evaluation, this fellow get what's due to him?" Omale zil shumle v'yodo ala tachtona. So Rav said, "All right, if that's the case, then make an evaluation and calculate, as we indicated before, is the increased value greater than his investment, or was the investment greater than the increased value, and he will get the lesser amount." Amale lo boina, and the owner says, "I don't want this at all." So he's expressing his objection to having to pay this guy anything. Lesof, afterwards, Chazia de Godra, the Komintalot. This owner, who seemed to express his intense objection, was seen fencing the area that was recently planted with the trees, and he was guarding it. Amale Rav said then, Golas Adaitech, you have revealed your true desires, Denicholach, that you are actually pleased and satisfied and happy with what he did. Otherwise, why would you protect it the way you do? Zil Shum Le V'yodo Al Elyona. You go now and make an assessment and give him, this worker, the greater value, as we referenced earlier. And now the next case. On the side of our Gemara, by the way, we have a topic heading, Nosei, which we call Hemshech, a continuation. And we've written, Habayne Churbasa Shechaver Oibolei Rishus, one who reconstructs a ruin owned by his friend without having been invited. Haim hu yochol lachzer veloimar sheikach es kol hachomarim b'chazara. Can the owner say to this uninvited party, take all of your materials back, Achrei Shikvar Bona, after he already did the reconstruction? The Gemara, Itmar Hayoreid L'Sei Churbosei Shchaveroi, someone descended upon someone else's ruin, Ubona Shelo Birshuso, and he renovated it without being invited. The Omar Loi, and the renovator says, "Atzai ve'avonai ani notel. I've decided to take back my materials, the wood and stones." Rav Nachman Omar Shomelo, the worker, this uninvited party, can call the shots. Rav Nachman says, "Yes, we listen to him." Rav Sheshes Omar Ein Shomelo, and Rav Sheshes disagrees. Mesvei, the Tanaic source says, Rav Shum Leomer, Beishamay Omerim Shomin Lo, Ubeisil Omerim Ein Shomin Lo. Concerning this very situation, it appears that Beishamay is ruling that we listen to the worker. Well, if that's the case, then it would be Beishamay's opinion that Rav Nachman was ruling like. Lema Rav Nachman di Omar ki Beishamay, should we say that Rav Nachman holds like Beishamay? And we know in general that Beishamay does not represent the accepted halacha. And Rav Nachman being an Amora and issuing a halachic ruling, you would expect him to rule like, let's say, Beis Hillel. So what's going on over here? What's the explanation for Rav Nachman ruling a final law that parallels the opinion of Beis Shammai? The Gemara responds, "Who, that is Rav Nachman, di Omar ki Hai Tana." He is based on a different Tanaic authority. We'll see in a moment. Reb Shimon ben Elazar, the Sanya, and in it says in this source again concerning a situation of someone being yerid l'seichu boshu chavero. It says in this source, Shoimin Lo, Devrei Reb Shimon Lozar. We listen to the worker. The worker can call the shots. I'm taking back my materials. And by Reb Shimon Lozar saying it thusly, he in effect is saying that according to Reb Shimon Lozar, there is no machlokis Beis Shammai Beis Hillel on this point. Namely, Beis Hillel agrees with this point of view. Shomin Lo. So therefore, Rav Nachman, in ruling Shomin Lo, is accepting, according to the Tana Rav Shimon Lozer, a unanimous earlier Tanaic opinion. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, here is what we saw earlier, Beis Shammai Omrim Shomin Lo, Beis Hillel Omrim Ein Shomin Lo. My Havi Allah. What is the final ruling? After all, we had a Machlokis Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. How should we rule? Amar Rav Yankiv, Amar Rav Yochanan. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The bias Shomin Lo, with regard to the case of reconstructing a ruin, there we would follow the opinion that says shomilo. Besodeh ain shomilo. In the case of a person descending upon a field uninvited and planting it, and then the worker saying, I want to take back my saplings. In a case of the field, ain shomilo. We would not heed the worker's demand. Besodeh mai taima. Why, in the case of a field, would we not heed his demand? So we have here two approaches. Aleph, mishum yishuv Eretz Yisrael, for the benefit of the land of Israel, to ensure that Israel is yishuv, means it's settled, it's established, and not left barren, so as to avoid a piece of the land of Israel being left barren, we will not heed the worker's insistence on having his request to uproot that which he planted. So in the interest of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, we don't listen to the worker who says, I'm taking back my saplings. Iko di Amri, another explanation why besodein shomelo, mishum kachasha di aro, because of literally weakening or depleting the strength of the ground. Once the trees were planted, they drew from the nutrients of the ground. So the thinking is that if the owner of the land paid the price, so to speak, whereby his land's nutrients were depleted, at least he should be able to continue benefiting from the further growth of those trees. And based on that, we will not heed the worker's demand to have his saplings returned. My binayu, what practical difference is there between these two approaches? Ika binayu, chutza laretz. The point of difference would be the same situation outside the land of Israel. If the consideration in not listening to the worker was Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that has no application outside the land of Israel, and therefore a worker who insists on taking his trees back, we would allow him to insist thusly and to take back the trees. If, however, the consideration is kacha shadiara, depletion of the ground, well, that issue is not dependent on the land of Israel versus outside the land. Wherever someone owns land and someone else planted trees in that property, there was depletion of soil nutrients, and therefore even outside the land of Israel, the worker, according to that approach, would not be listened to. Now the new Mishnah. This Mishnah, you will see, deals with laws regarding rented houses and the ability of the owner to remove the renter from the property. You can use an expression like serving notice to leave as a catch-all phrase for the topic of this Mishnah. Hamaskir bias lechavero. I should point out, by the way, that though the initial translation can be offered, the accurate understanding of the Mishnah will be appreciated only once you get into the Gemara. The Mishnah. Hamaskir bias lechavero. B'moys hakshomim eino yochol lotzio min hachag ve'ad ha-pesach. One who rents a house to his friend, so during the rainy season, one cannot remove him from the property from Sukkot until Pesach. B'moys ha-chamo, during the summer season, shloishim yom, 30 days. Once again, I remind you, we're giving a literal translation, but the understanding of what the Mishnah is saying will only become clear later in the Gemara. Ubikrochem, when it comes to cities, larger cities. Rashi explains, "Ubekrochem shein mokim hashvokim." Krochem are characterized by places where there are markets, commercial areas. Shalkol nimshachem sham logur sham. People are drawn to live there. Vabotim ein mitsuyin liskar. And as a result of the demand in living there, you are not going to find houses readily available. So that if you're in a large city and you're going to request the renter to leave, you will have to serve notice quite a bit of time ahead. Echod yemois hachamo ve'echod yemois hakshomim. Whether it's the summer or the winter, shneim osur chodesh. You have to give him lead time of 12 months. Ubachanuyos, rental of stores, and store owners. In this case, you have someone who owns the commercial enterprise, and then there's someone that owns the property, as is the case to this day, where there are many stores that are occupied by people renting the facility. So with regard to Chanuyos and the landlord, Rashi points out that what characterizes stores is their selling items on credit. So there are many people out there in the population that received items from the store and owe money. And just imagine the store owner, again, not the landlord, but the fellow that runs the enterprise. If he changes location, people will not know where he is in order to pay their debts. So when it comes to stores, we say echod ayoros ve'echod krochim shneim osur chodesh. Whether it's smaller cities or larger cities, one can remove a store tenant by serving notice 12 months ahead of time. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Chanus Shel Nachtomim, when it comes to bakers, Vishel Savoyim, or dyers, word seva is color, reference to establishments where people will serve the public in dyeing their fabrics. Shalosh Shonim, the time frame there is 3 years. Rashi points out that in those cases of bakers and dyers, the length of credit time for payback is very long. There is a Rashi that I'd like to look at together with you, a few lines up from here. Uve Chanios, Shechenvoni Makiv Hakofos La Makirin. The store vendor extends credit to those that he is familiar with. Veshoyin Milishalim Liyomim Rabim, and they delay a long time before paying him. Ukshmevin Loy Ma'isov, and when they come with their money, Boyin Ayade Pesach Achanus Shekifu Sham, they come by the door of the place that they receive the credit. Vim Holach Lamokom Acher, and if the vendor goes to another location, Einon Yoidin Ono Yimtsu, the public won't know where to find him. And therefore, with that in mind, Ein Yachal Hotzio Kol Yud Beis Chodesh. From the time that you want to remove him and his actual removal, you can't remove him within 12 months. So that, therefore, within those 12 months, the hope is that people that owe money will pay up their debts. And obviously they know where he is up till the end of that time period. The Gemara. Before we continue in the Gemara text, triangles appear, one of our series markings, and that naturally draws your attention to the margin. We have a Nosei / Mivne heading. The triangles here represent Shlavim, stages, Lahavonas, Chiluke, Hazmanim, to understand the different times, time lengths, Shebein Yemoisach Shomim Yemoisach Chamo Hashnuyim B'Mishneh, the different time lengths that between rainy season and summer that are taught in the Mishnah, regarding the removal of the tenant from the property. I think that we should make an assumption, and that is that when the initial renting took place, there wasn't any specific date noted in the contract the beginning of from September 1 till September 1 next year. In a case like that, things are very clear, and everyone understands where they stand. But let's assume that given an open rental situation where two parties agree that they're going to rent, that an owner will rent his property to a tenant, they agree upon a monthly rate, but the length of the contract was never specified. Dates were never written in. So with that in mind, then the laws of the Mishnah kick in. What rights does the owner have over the tenant with regard to his removal? Now the Gemara. Mishna Yemois HaKshomim, what is different about the winter season, the Chiogar Inish Beisa B'Yemois HaKshomim, when a person rents a house during the rainy season? Now Rashi adds immediately that the expression Yemois HaKshomim means a person who rents L'Yemois HaKshomim, meaning a customer came along to a landlord and said, rent me your house for the rainy season. Now, if that's the case, the Gemara is asking, if we make that assumption, the Gemara is asking, what is the difference between someone who comes to rent for the rainy season? Agar lekulu yemois hakshamim. Agar means he rents it for the entire rainy season. Yemois hachamonami, the same thing with someone who would come along and say, rent me the property for the summer season. The summer being, just we'll assume for right now, a half year. From the summer being from Pesach till Sukkot. Someone who says, rent me the house for Yemois hachamonami. Likewise, the chiogar inish besa, when a person rents a house for the Yemois hachamo, lekul Yemois hachamo ogar, he rents it for the entire summer season. So in the Mishnah, it would be hard to understand why, when it comes to a person who comes to rent for the rainy season, so the landlord cannot remove the tenant from Sukkot till Pesach. Those are the boundaries of the rainy season. Why then, when it comes to Yemois HaChamo, which are bounded by Pesach till Sukkot, does the Mishnah not say the same thing, but rather the Mishnah talks about 30 days? Ella, so come up stage two, the next stage to just understand the Mishnah. First of all, we're dealing with someone that comes and rents without delineating, I am renting it for the rainy season. As Rashi says, we're talking about Seicher Stam, someone who comes to rent. I want to rent your house. Now, he doesn't, as we said, he doesn't specify the length of time. And it's also, Rashi points out that the unqualified rental period, when you don't specify a length of time, there's an understanding one rents for a minimum of 30 days. Let us look at Rashi together, just a couple lines down from here. So we're looking at Rashi to serve as an introduction to the Gemara that's actually quite terse. Ubasoicher stam, koma Rashi says. We're talking about someone who rents in a stam, in an unqualified fashion, vashminin, and we are informed, the Mishnah tells us, dasoicher stam shalopirish zman, a person who rents in an unqualified fashion without specifying length of time, have schirus shloshim yoim, a minimum of 30 days, hilkach, b'yemois hachamo, during the summer season, the Shchiach Beisah, houses are commonly found. You can find vacant properties in the Yomois Achamo. Im bo lehotzio lesoif shloshim, if the landlord after 30 days go by, we mentioned that stam schirus is 30 days. So if 30 days went by since he rented the property, motzi, the landlord can remove the tenant. Uvimois hachadshomim, during the rainy season, delo shiach besa, it's hard to find. Shiach is to do with availability, literally, common, frequent. It's hard to find a vacant property during the rainy season. Afalgav delo agri ela shloshim yom, even if the tenant was there after renting it for 30 days, eino yochel otzio min hachag v'ad ha-pesach, the landlord cannot remove the tenant from Sukkot till Pesach. V'chayev litein lo b'chol chodesh, and the tenant has to pay kischar chodesh harishon, the same amount that he paid for the first month. So now let's go back to the Gemara with the Rashi in mind. Second wide line, Elo, B'yemois HaGshomim, Hainu Taimo. Why in the Mishnah, when it speaks about Yemois HaGshomim, do we say that the landlord, the owner, cannot remove the tenant from Sukkot till Pesach? Delo Shchiach Beisel Megar. It's uncommon to find an alternative rental facility. That's the nature of the rainy season. Therefore, even though someone may have rented and was there for 30 days, if you find yourself in the midst of the rainy season, you can't demand his exit until Pesach. Emo Seifa. Let's keeping that in mind, we continue now with the reading of the continuation of the Mishnah. Bikrochim, in large cities, echod yemois hachamo v'echod yemois hagshomim shnei mosor chodesh. Whether it be the summer season or the winter season, 12 months. V'ilu molu le yoimei schirus b'yemois hagshomim. The understanding from the seifa is that the tenant will remain, when it comes to a city dwelling, 12 months. And when the 12 months end, even if they happen to end in the middle of the Yomois HaGshomim, Mapikle, the landlord, can remove the tenant. Vamai, why should he be able to remove the tenant in light of the explanation we gave just before? Ha lo shchiach beis olamegar. It's uncommon during the rainy season to find a vacant house. So if the svara, if the analysis of Yemois HaGshomim, why the tenant who rented stam can demand remaining there till the end of the rainy season because of lo shchiach beis olamegar, why then in the case of Krochim does that svara not apply? Omar Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda says we have to take a new approach to the Mishnah. Lehodi'a kotani. The Mishnah deals with the issue of advance notice. Vehochi ko'omar. And thusly, one is to understand the Mishnah. What we're going to do is we're going to read the Rashi first, as we do from time to time, to serve as an introduction to the Gemara, and then we'll go back into the Gemara. So Rashi that we're looking at, Lehodia Kotoni, is a little more than halfway down the page. Rashi says, Hanach Shloishim V'yud Beis Chodesh DeKotoni B'Masnisen, the time lengths that were stated in the Mishnah, 30 days, 12 months, Lehodia Komar, or are times that are related to advance notice. Hamaskir bias l'chavero. Kalu yemei haschirus b'yemei sakshamim. One who rents a house to a tenant, and the end of the rental period is in the middle of the rainy season. Eino yochel otzio misham. He cannot remove the tenant at that point. And by the way, the expression of kolu yemei haschirus would indicate that the initial rental was with an understood time length. And when the time ends in the middle of the rainy season, eino yochol lotzil misham, you can't say, well, your rental ended, go out. Delo shrichi bati, it's uncommon to find houses. Elim kein hodio b'yemois hachamo shloishim yoim shelo yarchiv lo hazman mishiyich lezmano. Unless the landlord served notice during the summer season, at least 30 days before the onset of the winter season, namely 30 days before the end of the summer season, the landlord would have had to tell the tenant, listen, I intend to remove you at the very end of the agreed upon rental period. Even if the rental period ends in the middle of the rainy season, since the landlord served notice 30 days before the onset of the rainy season, only then can the landlord remove the tenant in the middle of that rainy season. Meaning, as Rashi says, the landlord informs the tenant, I have no intention of extending the rental period. So I'm telling you now, and as Rashi says, that's from the no later than, the serving of notice can be no later than the 15th of the month of Elul. V'hainu mitezvav be'elul tzorach lo'odio 30 yom kodem achag. 15th of Elul is 30 days before Sukkis. Sukkis is the 15th of Tishrei. U'memeilo shaminon, and from this we learn, im kolu lo yemei schiruso b'yemei sachamo, if a rental period ends during the summer season, eino yochol otzio ad shloshim yom mi shehodio, he cannot remove the tenant other than 30 days after he served notice. The landlord would have to serve notice to a tenant whose time period is going to end during the summer season and tell him that I know that in a month's time your tenancy finishes. I have no intention of extending the contract. If the landlord intends to remove the tenant, so as we just explained, he would have to serve notice 30 days before the end of the tenancy that I'm not extending the contract. And when it comes to cities, this rule of non-extension of contract based on the serving of notice ahead of time, that serving of notice ahead of time, tzorch lodio yud beis chodesh kodem yitzioso, he will have to have served notice 12 months before his intended removal. V'im lo hodio lo yetze, and if that notice is not served, you cannot remove him. Elo noisim lo kemishpat harishon. And then you would have to allow him to stay there as long as the first rental period had been. Now we go back to the Gemara, and we saw our third triangle. Rav Yudah says that the time frames of the Mishnah are times that deal with lohdia, serving of notice. A person who rents a house to his friend in an unqualified fashion, he cannot remove the tenant during the rainy season, which is from Sukkot until Pesach. Helen Kane Hodio Shloshim Yoim Meikora. Unless he served notice 30 days before the onset of the rainy season. Tanya Nami Hochi, and a Tanaic source supports Rav Yehuda's understanding. Rav Yehuda was an Amora, and he gave his understanding of the Mishnah, with the time frames being explained as time frames regarding serving of notice. And we have a Brisa that supports this, and it says, Kishomru Shloishim, Kishomru Shneimos Chedesh, when the rabbis stated 30 days, or 12 months, Lo Omru Elo Loho Dio. These are times that deal with the serving of notice ahead of time regarding ultimate removal of tenant. And just like we have rules regarding owner, landlord serving notice, a renter also, if he intends to leave, he has to inform ahead of time the landlord. The Amale, the owner, could say, if in the as far as the owner's claim against a tenant that wants to leave, and the and hence the landlord's anticipation of receiving notice of such, he, the owner, can say, E Oidasan, if you would have informed me, and not left at the drop of a hat, E Oidasan, Hava Tarachna Umosivna Beinish Malyo. I would have had enough time to trouble myself and find a positive, Malia means positive, a positive individual, a proper tenant, and not leave the house vacant. Therefore, if you don't give me if you don't give me sufficient time to find a replacement tenant, I'm going to have a situation where the house will be sitting vacant, and I'll lose out rental income as a result. Therefore, the requirement of a tenant serving notice concerning his departure is also a demand. Omar Rav Asi, Im nichnas yoim echod b'mois hakshomim eino yochol lotzio minachag ala pesach. Here we'll translate literally. Rav Asi says if one day of the rainy season enters, then the landlord cannot remove him from Sukkot until Pesach. Now, Rav Asi then speaks about a one day. What's this one day entering one day into the rainy season? Vo'anan shloishim yoim komar. But we just got finished speaking about 30 days before the onset of the rainy season. If notice is not served, you cannot remove the tenant. So why is Rav Asi giving us the impression of the onset of one day into the rainy season and the prohibition of removing the tenant? We have a much stricter time approach. So what's Rav Asi talking about? Hochi komar. This is what Rav Asi is saying. Im nichnas yoim echad b'yemois hagshomim mei hani shloishim yoim eino yochol lotzio min hachag v'ad haPesach. We spoke about 30 days before the onset of the rainy season. Rav Asi refers to a situation of one day into those 30 days, it's already too late, and the tenant cannot be removed until Pesach. So that if the landlord doesn't wake up in time to tell the tenant 30 days before the onset of the rainy season, but rather he was late. He reminded himself to speak up 29 days before the rainy season, it's too late, and the tenant must be allowed to remain there till Pesach. Omar Rav Huna, v'im bo l'rabbis debedomeo marbe. If the landlord didn't serve notice on time, and we said that as a result of that, he can't force the exit of the tenant until Pesach. However, and here we're going to translate literally and then upgrade the understanding as we get into the Gemara. But initially, what it sounds like, Rav Huna is saying that in the event that he didn't serve notice on time, he can, however, up the rent money. So that if he was, he can, and it doesn't give you any limitation, he can uproot it, sounds like, in an unlimited fashion. Amar Leh Rav Nachman says, that ruling of Rav Huna, if we accept it as it is, Linkite Bekoifse Delishbekite Leglimahu. Now, this is an expression, it has a literal explanation, but we're not going to initially translate it by its literal translation. First, Rav Nachman is saying, we understand that a landlord has limitations. The Mishnah said that. That's the teaching of the Mishnah, with our understanding that if you don't serve notice on time, too bad. That's it. You, the landlord, cannot force exit. Not at all, until the summer season arrives, until Pesach. With Rav Huna's teaching, it sounds like the landlord still has a very easy option available. And simply just jack up the rental fee 10 times what he was paying before, and the guy's going to leave. That's the equivalent, and here is what Rav Nachman's phrase is coming to say, by raising the rental money, that's the equivalent of forcing his removal. See, you just said before, and the Mishnah communicates the idea that a landlord cannot force the removal of the tenant unless notice was served properly. In light of Rav Huna's teaching, you've taken out all of the power behind the ruling of the Mishnah. Landlord can easily remove him, even without having served notice, just by jacking up the price. Now, as far as the literal translation of that phrase, we're going to read the Rashi, and I know for some, we're going to read something that might sound a little, we'll call it politically incorrect, or lack of good taste, or whatever, but there's an obligation on our part to at least read the Rashi and explain it, and you can take it from there. The Rashi on the last, toward the end of the narrow lines, Hai nakte b'kaifse, the word kaifse has to do with things that are suspended, things that are hanging. So, Rashi says, Harehu, by Rav Huna's teaching, allowing the landlord to up the rental price as he sees fit, that's tantamount to grabbing the man by his testicles, ad sheminiach loy taliso, until he lays down his garment. In other words, we're describing a situation of forcing a person into a situation. Klomar, kevon shemala al domov, since Rav Huna is giving the option of raising the rental fee, ein l'chom motzi gadol mizeh, there's no greater form of removal, of forced removal, than that. So let's go back to the Gemara. Now, so Rav Nachman expressed his objections to Rav Huna. Lo, Tzricha, no. What Rav Huna is referring to is the Iker Boti. The rental rate increased. And Rashi says, Shehefseido Niker. So all that Rav Huna is saying is that if a true notice wasn't served on time, and therefore the landlord has to leave the tenant there till the end of the rainy season. But if in the course of that time rental fees in general increased, the landlord has a right to increase the rental fee in accordance with the general increase in rates, so as not to experience loss of proper rental profit. Now, let's go back to the Gemara. Pshita, actually, before we continue with the text, we should take advantage of our nosei, our topic heading. The nosei. Mahein chovos hamaskir lasocher. What are the obligations of the landlord to the tenant? B'mikrim shel shinui. Matzavim. Change in situations. Bailus shel bias. Or ownership of house. Kagon. Nofal habayis. Imagine a property collapses. What obligations are there between the owner of the property that just now collapsed and the tenant? Or number two, mochrei hamaskir lacherim, a landlord, owner of property, has a tenant in there, and in the meantime, the owner sold it to others. Now, the Gemara. Pshita nofa lebesa. It's clear, it's simple to understand that if the house fell, it collapsed, Omar le, the owner, can say to the tenant, lo adifas minoi. Literally is, you're not any better, you have no greater strength or demands, you're no better than I am. Now, let us take a look at the Rashi. Lo adifas minoi. Rashi that we're looking at is on the third line under the Gemara text. Hayo vigia zmanoi motzio. Since the time has come, the tenant can be removed. The Vavilna Goin in Hagoy Sagra says dafka higia. We must assume then, according to that notation, that only if the end of the time has arrived, the landlord can remove him. The Omale, the owner, says, "Hello, encha bo alai, helamachmas shelo hodatich." Your only claim against me in wanting to remain in the property is because I didn't serve notice ahead of time in the proper way. Viata encha motze bias liskar, and it's, we'll say, the end of the time period arrived during the middle of the rainy season, and you want to stay on because I didn't serve notice as we indicated before, and you can't find a house. Afani lo hoyo li lo hodiacha, so too I. There was no expectation of me to have served notice. Shelo yadati shipo besi. I didn't know my house was going to collapse. Vani, and me, and I, eini motzei bias liskar, and I can't find a house to rent either. V'lo tov shetodur ato bifnim vani b'chutz. And you can't expect me to live outside while you are dwelling within. Let us go over this last point with greater accuracy. What happened here in the Gemara? The Gemara said, Pshita nofalei besa. It's obvious that in the event that the landlord who was dwelling in his own house, in other words, this man had two properties. He had his own house and he had this rental facility. In the meantime, the landlord's own house collapsed. And as Rashi says, the tenancy period of the renter arrived. And now we have a situation where the owner is out of a house. His house collapsed. We've got a rental facility that had a tenant in it. And it just so happened that the owner did not serve notice to the tenant. We'll say 30 days before the onset of the rainy season. The rental period terminated in this particular case in the middle of rainy season, and had nothing strange happen, nothing out of the ordinary. If the tenancy period ends in the middle of the rainy season and notice was not served, so the owner must leave the tenant there until Pesach. However, we add one new factor. Tenancy period ended in the middle of the rainy season. Notice was not served, but the owner's house collapsed. Where is the owner to stay now? So in a case like that, the owner can tell the tenant, as we saw in the Gemara, Lo adifas minoi, you're not any better than I am. Face it, your tenancy period came to an end. Your only claim against me, or your only possible demand to remain on till the end of the rainy season, in face, of course, of your difficulty now to find a new house to rent, your only claim against me is that I didn't serve you notice. Yeah, but I didn't know my house was going to fall down in the middle of the rainy season. True, I didn't have initial intention of serving those, because it would have been okay with me for you to continue on. But now that my house fell down, and even though I didn't serve you notice, your tenancy period has arrived, as we noted from the Vilna Gaon, and it's either you or me. And you're not better than me, and after all, it is my property, says the owner, so you are the one that's going to have to leave. And again, I emphasize, according to the Vilna Gaon, his tenancy period ended. The only weakness, so to speak, that the owner might have had to experience is that he didn't serve notice. But he couldn't have served notice in this particular case. He never anticipated his house collapsing. Let's go on in the Gemara, number 2. Zavnei o urse o yohavei b'matona. A renter, an owner of a property that rented it out. In the meantime, this owner sold it, or bequeathed it, or gave it as a gift to someone else. Gave title of the property to someone else. Omar le, the socher, the renter, says to the new owner, Lo adifus migavro di osis mine. You don't have any greater strength than the one from whom you came. And just like there were restrictions upon the original owner, and as we explained before, the need to serve notice in a proper advance method, you too cannot demand my exit. And therefore, you can't expect me to leave, even though my tenancy period has arrived. You can't expect me to leave until the end of the rainy season. We continue in the Gemara, a third situation, kalalei livrei. What does that refer to? That refers to a situation where a man is marrying off his son, and there's an expectation that the father provides a dwelling for his son. That's in general terms. That's basically what Rashi says here. So now you have an owner of a property with a tenant in there, and the owner of the property is marrying off his son. And there is the expectation that the son receives from his father a dwelling. Chazinon, we continue in the Gemara, we look, we evaluate. If there was a possibility on the part of the owner, the father, to inform the tenant, so we expect him to have done so. And if he didn't do so when he could have, so then he can't force the tenant to leave. The ilo, if there wasn't any option, for whatever circumstances, the marriage was very sudden, we'll say, and he had no option of informing the tenant, Amalei, then the owner can say, Lo adifas minoi, you're not any better, you don't have any greater strength, staying power than me. And therefore, I'm going to assume, like the Vilna Gaon said earlier, that we're talking under circumstances where the original understood rental period came to an end. So therefore, the father, being that he couldn't have served notice ahead of time, can remove the tenant in favor of his son. Hahu gavra de zovan arbo de chamra was a man that bought a boatload of wine with in barrels. Lo Ashkach, by the way, note that we have a long marking. That's an incident that takes a number of lines of Gemara to develop. Lo Ashkach Duchta Lo Sove. He couldn't find a Duchta, place Lo Sove, to place them, to store the barrels. Omar Lo Le Itza. So this man approached a woman and asked her, Yis Loch Duchta Lo Ogri? Do you have any room for, any place for me to store the barrels? That Logri means that to rent to me. I need to rent an area to store the barrels. Omro, lay low. The woman says, no, I don't have. Ozal Kitcha. This man went and married that woman. Yoav Ole Duchta Laile. And she provided for him a place for the barrels. Ozal Lebese. This man went home. Kosav Lo Gita. And he wrote up a divorce document. Shodar Lo. And sent her the divorce. I think it's clear that in the meantime, this man's barrels are currently sitting in her property. He's now divorcing her. Oslo ihi, she went out. She now went agra shkuloi mineove. She went and hired porters to carry out to remove the barrels from her property, and paid the porters from the wine itself. Afikte v'oisfei b'shvila. So she saw to it that the wine was removed and placed in the street. Shvila, like the word shvil, a path or a street. Omar Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua. Rav Huna, in looking at this case, in ruling upon it, kasher osa ken yaselo. As he did, so is done to him. Gemulo yashuv b'rosho. His behavior is returned back on his head. In other words, the woman and her conduct receives Rav Huna's approval. This guy was a crooked individual, and the Gemara shows how far we are going to go with this understanding. Lo mibaya. I need not tell you chotzu de lo kaima l'agra, that if we were dealing in the case of this woman with a property that's not a rental property, that's obvious. It's that her behavior is fine. She had property that it wasn't. There was never any intention. It wasn't designed to be rented out. So when she said initially, "I don't have property for your wine barrels," that was quite the case. True, she had sufficient room for it, but it wasn't Kaimalagra. It wasn't property that was to be rented in the first place. So as a result of marrying her, so that it became a reality for him to have a place to store the wine. And then, as you can see from the story, is this crooked man's behavior of then divorcing her once he got a place for his wine. So she had all the right in the world to do what she did. Elo, the Gemara goes on. Elo, afilu chotzer de kaima la'agra. Even if this woman's property was property, it was a courtyard that was designed to be rented out. Even so, Omrole, she can say to this guy, to the husband, l'chule alma nicholi l'gore, l'cholo nicholi, I would be happy to rent it out. I'd be satisfied to rent it out to anyone else, but not to you. The domus alai ki arya arba. You are like a lion waiting in wait to ambush me. In other words, I have no faith in you, and I would have no intention in continuing to allow you to keep your wine in my property, even under rental circumstances. So she simply got rid of the wine, paid the porters from the wine itself, and with this attitude or this position of domus alai ki arya arba, she had the right to do what she did. Rav Shimon Gamliel Oimer shel nachtaimim shel tzavoyin sholoi shonim. The time frame in which notice must be served before removing a tenant that's a baker or a dyer is 3 years. Tana, and it's explained, Mipnei Shehekefon Meruba, because the Hekefon is the credit that they extend to customers, is very great. Rashi on the Mishnah explained that's a reference to a long period of time. They extend credit to their customers for long periods of time. And therefore, as we explained earlier, the owner, before removing them, must serve notice 3 years ahead of time. The Mishnah. On the side, we have a no say topic heading. Chayvaseim shel hamaskir v'asocher klapei tachzukas habayis. The obligations of the owner, the landlord, and the tenant regarding the maintenance of the property. The Mishnah. Hamaskir v'ayis l'avero. Hamaskir chayav bedelas beneger uvemanol. In the case of a rental situation, so the owner, the maskir, the landlord, is obligated to provide the door, the bolt, and the lock. Ubechol davar shemaisa uman, and all other matters that require an expert craftsman to provide. Avol davar sheno maisa uman hasocher osehu. Those aspects of property maintenance that you don't require an uman, an expert craftsman, to perform, so the tenant must take care of them. Hazevel shel baal habayis, the zevel. Zevel is a reference to material that is used as fertilizer. We'll see more about that in the Gemara. Bearing in mind that amongst the different materials or substances that are suitable for fertilizer is a manure of animals. So the zevel, that belongs to the landlord. V'ein la'secher ela hayotze min ha'tanur u'min ha'kirayim bilvad. The tenant has no rights to fertilizer material other than the ash that comes forth from ovens. Tanur and kiram are different forms of ovens. Tonu rabbonon, hamaskir bayis l'chavero, maskir chayev lehamid lo dolosois, liftoch lo chalainois. The owner is expected to provide the door, to open a window. In other words, if you have a solid wall and there's the need for a window, the owner must provide that. And in other words, you'll have to hire a craftsman that knows how to break open holes in walls. What else? Lechazek lo tikra. It means to strengthen the ceiling. If the ceiling rafters developed, say, worms, worms started eating away, eroding the boards that constitute the tikra of the ceiling, so the owner must repair that. Lismoich loy kura, and if there's a need for a support beam, so that must be provided by the owner. The support beam, Rashi points out, in Nishbur Achasme, if one of the koros broke, so he must provide that. You can see by looking at the Gemara and the Rashi, you have a reference to Nisorim and Koros. There are in English you might translate the Nisorim as boards and Korah as beams. But you can see from here that you're dealing with different aspects of ceiling or roof maintenance. Fesocher chayev lasos lo sulam, the tenant is obligated to provide the sulam, a ladder, lasos lo mica, to fence in the roof, and lasos lo marzev, to provide a we'll say drainage, a gutter, ulatiach es gago, and to tar down the roof. Bo'u mine me Rav Sheshes. The question was asked of Rav Sheshes, and you see a bracketed line. The reason for that, because that which is within the brackets is the language that is not accurate. And if we skip it momentarily, the question that was asked of Rav Sheshes is Mokoim mezuzah al mi. The term mezuzah has several meanings. The word mezuzah, you can see when you say the Kriya Shema, is a reference to a piece of parchment on which two paragraphs, two of the Shema paragraphs are written, Shema Vo'avim Shema, and that piece of parchment is affixed to a doorpost, as I'm sure most of you are quite familiar. The word mezuzah also is a reference to the doorpost itself. Now, in the Gemara's case, Mokom mezuzah, Rashi, the last line says, Mokom mezuzah ha'etz, the wood, the post, shadeles shekef alav. In closing a door, there's a certain point on the doorpost that the door closes, and it doesn't go beyond that. Otherwise, you'd have a swinging door. So that point at which the door stops is a point on the doorpost that usually extends outward from the flat post onto which the door stops. So the Mokom mezuzah is the doorpost on which the door closes. The afhu korui mezuzah, that doorpost is called mezuzah. The even who, now if the doorpost happens to be made of stone, and you also have the issue of affixing the mezuzah to a stone doorpost, what do you need to do? Tzorch linkoiv boi sedek lanicha b'soicha. You need to create a sedek, is literally a crack, a hole, a depression into which you would affix the mezuzah, the parchment. So now, with that in mind, who, renter or landlord, who must create that depression in a stone doorpost? Now, let's go back to the bracketed section. The question was asked of Rav Sheshes, mezuzah al mi. Who must provide the mezuzah? Now, in this case, mezuzah is a reference to the parchment that's affixed to doorposts. Mezuzah. So the Gemara responds in a tone of wonderment. Why are you asking about that? The obligation of providing the traditional mezuzah is an obligation upon the door, the tenant, the dweller. It's not an obligation upon the owner of the property. It's an obligation upon the one who dwells there. In fact, it's taught in another Gemara that the mezuzah actually serves as a protection of the dwellers. So it's an obligation upon the tenant. Ela. So then what was the question asked of Rav Sheshes? If you're asking something, it's got to be something that's not so obvious. Mokom mezuzami, upon whom is the obligation to create the depression in a stone doorpost? Amalu Rav Sheshes Tanisua. Rav Sheshes, you can answer the question by studying our Mishnah. It says, Dovar She'ein Maise Uman Hasecher Oisehu. That which does not require a craftsman, the tenant is to provide it. V'hai nami, the mokom mezuzah, that issue of where to place the mezuzah, lav maisa umanhu, is not something that demands a craftsman. Now, my understanding is, in light of the Rashi, that if the only option of affixing a mezuzah to the doorpost would be the creation of a depression in a stone doorpost, that in fact would require a craftsman. However, the issue is, I need a place, given that I have a stone doorpost, I need a place to affix the mezuzah. the Mishnah says that, well, if it's an issue, if it's a situation that doesn't require a craftsman, the tenant does it. And the Gemara says, you know what? This situation, you don't need a craftsman. Why? Efshehu, the Gemara continues at the top of Kuf Beis, begufsa dekanya. You can affix the mezuzah through the use of a reed pole. Kanya is a reed. Gufsa dekanya is a pole. Say a long reed. There are some additional explanation that you would need than the simple translation. What you can see in the Meforshim, you can look into the Ritva. He takes a reed pole and, in order to avoid the problem raised by the Tosfos, the reed pole is affixed with nails to the stone doorpost, and then you would affix your mezuzah to the reed pole. That doesn't require an uman, a craftsman, and hence we would say that the issue of moko mezuzah that was asked of Rav Sheshes, he answers you, that would be something that the tenant would have to take care of. Tonu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source that deals with the issue referred to on the side under our Nosei. Din Haitzas Mezuzah Midira She'ezev Oisai Osa. The din regarding the removal of a mezuzah from a dwelling. The source Tana Rabbanan Hamaskir Bayis Lechavero, one who is renting a house to a tenant, Ala Soich Lasoich Loi Mezuzah. It is the tenant's obligation to provide the mezuzah. The mezuzah here, of course, is the parchment, the traditional mezuzah, as we often refer to it by simple the term mezuzah. Ukshu yotzei lo yitleno biyodo v'yotzei, and when the tenant leaves, he shall not take it with him. True, he put it there. Now he's leaving. He shall not take the mezuzah with him. The Ritva adds that once the mezuzah was affixed, it was responsible for a certain higher level of divine presence. So it's not fitting for him to remove that from the house. We continue in the source, Umi Nohri, if you rented from a heathen, and now you're a tenant that was renting in a property owned by a heathen, and you're leaving the heathen's property. In the meantime, when you started renting, you had affixed the mezuzah to your doorpost. Note lo v'yodo v'yotze. You take the mezuzah with you and leave. Don't leave the mezuzah on a property that's owned by a heathen. Umaisa be'echad shenot lo v'yodo. And there was an incident where someone took the mezuzah. Now, but the simple reading, and this will not be the final approach, but the simple reading is that this story is coming on the heels of the rule that when you're leaving a property owned by a heathen, take the mezuzah with you. And now we have an incident where someone left the property, took the mezuzah with him, and he ended up burying his wife and his two children. Well, that's really strange. Maisa listar. You're teaching an incident to contradict the rule that was just taught. You just taught that when you're renting or leaving a heathen-owned property, take the mezuzah. Why would you then bring a story that shows how treacherous or how devastating that could be? Amar Rav Sheshes, ah Reisha. So Rav Sheshes says that this incident, the Mais of Echad Shenot Labiyado, is a continuation or an illustration of the Aleph point, namely a tenant leaving a Jewish-owned property is not to take the mezuzah with him. And if that tenant removes the mezuzah from the Jewish-owned property, then the devastating result featured in the Tanaic source and the story therein is to be anticipated. And just to end off on a positive note, therefore, when leaving a Jewish property, leave the mezuzah there so as to maintain the increased divine presence that mezuzah afforded. Before concluding, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.